is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line. We're back from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Stormy Bonatoni, Michael Lombardi. With us as always from the East Coast, ready for a really action-packed hour here, Michael. We will break down some college football win totals this year. Tim Murray, big part of our college football betting guide, host of VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern. He'll join us in a half hour. We've been doing a series, it's a fun little mini-series of my best bet of the day here for college football win totals. So we'll stay in the MAC. Team I'm down on this year, we'll talk about that at the end of the show. Get into some red chip, blue chip players on the defensive line for you. But we start with what is on Michael's mind, and there can probably be nothing else than the big news of the day, which is Brandon Ayuk. What will happen there? In case you missed it, Matt Maiocco, the report from NBC Sports Bay Area, who I believe we will be talking to tomorrow on the show. Excited for that conversation. With Matt's report last night, Brandon Ayuk and San Francisco, they have a framework deal in place, both with Cleveland and New England here, and that is certainly what is on your mind as we start the second hour of our show.
Yeah, you know, Matt does a great job out there in the Bay Area covering, although one thing, he hasn't had his report confirmed by Adam Schefter, which I find interesting because Schefter is wired into this building, going back to the days when he covered the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post and the Shanahans were all there. So I'm not saying Matt's report isn't correct. I'm just saying there's a little bit of hesitant. I've never seen an agreement with two teams on a trade and the agents talking to both teams. I've never seen that before. Maybe it's happening. But this is on my mind because I don't think this is where the 49ers wanted to be. I think the 49ers wanted to do a deal with Ayuk. They've offered him a lot of contracts. But at the end of the day, he was being unreasonable. And when you're unreasonable like Ayuk is and you're coming off of two really good years – but you haven't really, you're not a, there's players in front of you in the line, DJ Moore being one of them. And you can't, when you can't make a deal around all these contracts that we've seen come in at the wide receiver market, then you are being unreasonable. And I think it's the same thing with CeeDee Lamb. I think CeeDee Lamb wants to be the highest paid guy. I think he's worried about what Chase is going to get. But if you're Brandon Ayuk, you're not in that category yet. You're maybe going to get there. You're a good player. But let's not forget this. One of the rules of what I believe in scouting more than anything is you can't overpay for good players. You can overpay for great players, and that's okay. But you should never overpay for good players. And Brandon Ayuk is a really good player. But at some point, Kyle Shanahan just said, wait a minute, hold on, time out. I've had enough. I'm not overpaying for this guy. I've got a team to keep together. I'll find another receiver. Maybe it's Ricky Pearsall. Maybe it's somebody we've never heard of, but we'll find one. But I'm not going to go ahead and spend $32 million a year for Brandon Ayuk and still want another receiver. So I think that's why it's on my mind. I think Kyle finally, like I've been saying on my podcast, Kyle got fed up.
It's been on my mind simply because the general narrative, the whole offseason into the start of summer camp was, hey, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Michael, but the general feeling was, look, this always happens. We've seen it before with San Francisco. They've got a lot of mouths to feed. It'll get figured out. I think to me, what's the most shocking part about it is that there was no give and take at all. And the fact that San Francisco got to this point before we even, forget the end. It'd be one thing if it was at the end of preseason and they admitted, okay, we haven't gotten anywhere close, but we haven't even had a preseason game yet for the Niners. And they're already saying, yeah, apparently, according to their support, we're ready to move on. That to me was the most telling sign because most people would have all said, me included, like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. No deal is going to get done because the Niners can just wait this thing out and Ayuk will ultimately get in line.
Well, I think this, too, is the reason you get to a point where you say, look, we're never going to be able to sign this guy. It's not going to be a good contract for us. And when that happens, you just got to walk away. Okay, look, would we rather have him on our team this year? Look, I find this really hard to believe. This conversation about windows is really annoying. Like, it's really annoying. Like, what window are we operating on? Okay, everybody takes this idea. Well, the window for the Niners is closing because Brock Purdy's going to get a contract. Okay. Well, Jalen Hurts got a contract. Is the Eagles window closed? Right? Justin Herbert got a contract. Are the Chargers windows closed? This whole notion about you have to be on a rookie contract, whoever has started that lie has been able to get it going forever. Like, one rookie contract has won. His name is Patrick Mahomes. His name is Patrick Mahomes. Now, he also holds the distinction of being the only quarterback to win a Super Bowl with more than 14% of the cap allocation. He's great. We get that. The Giants are paying 19% of their cap to Daniel Jones. That's ridiculous. The Eagles are paying 7%. The Cowboys are paying the most to any quarterback in the league for Dak Prescott. That won't get you to the Super Bowl.
Right.
That's not going to get you. What you have to do is structure contracts so that you're paying in between that 10 and 13% of the cap, and eventually it's going to go up as the years go up. But this notion that you have to have a rookie contract or your window closes is just really stupid.
We've seen it extrapolate into other situations beyond just quarterback. Lions, the best example from last year. It was, well, it's a real shame they choked that game to the 49ers because that was their window. And it was predicated on, oh, Ben Johnson, brilliant offensive mind. Well, the personnel's still there. Johnson comes back, and all of a sudden it's, oh, yeah, actually, never mind. Lions, they're good. But had Johnson left, they would have been screwed. Like, you can't tell me, based on the personnel, the Lions would have been a four-win team just because of one single coaching position that would have changed. I think we're starting to do that not only in quarterbacks but around the league as well.
Well, the Goff's at like 10% of their cap. They managed it correctly.
They have
what they didn't do is sign Jonah Jackson. They said, okay, we can't afford him. We're going to sign Kevin Zeitler, replace him with a cheaper guy, and we'll give that money to Armand St. Brown. We'll give that money to Taylor Lewan. We'll give it to some other player on the team that we feel like deserves it, and it could be Goff too, and they did. But to me, that's called cap management. You can't pay everybody, and this idea you have to have a rookie contract when there's been one rookie who's won a Super Bowl.
Sure thing. When you put it like that, that makes a lot more sense to think about and why teams continually struggle with that very concept. We do have a lot of quarterback news, though, Micah, for week one of the preseason we've yet to get to as far as quarterback announcements, who will play, who will not. The big line move we've seen over the last 24 hours, it's the Raiders game coming up in week one here. Just updating my odds screen because we have to. It's been this thing has been changing like crazy. Las Vegas and Minnesota, open Vikings 1.5-point favorite, got out as high as Raiders -5.5. Now it's Raiders -4. The large piece of movement was that we will see both Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, according to head coach Antonio Pierce, for an entire quarter. And they've listed that first depth chart. It is the classic O'Connell or Minshew. They list O'Connell first, Minshew second there as we go in. And something you've been talking about throughout the last few weeks is that O'Connell at least has the early leg up on Minshew in that camp battle.
Well, I mean, look, as the great John Madden said, when you got two of something, you don't have anything. I mean, let's face it, the Raiders don't have it. The Raiders got other issues, too. Like, Davante Adams hasn't really done a whole lot, right? He and I think this perception that Davante is an elite receiver has kind of might get distorted a little bit because he wasn't the same guy last year, kind of always covered a little bit. He's got a little bit of Hopkins in him. You know, he's declining. He's not the same player. He wants a new deal. They're not giving him a new deal. His energy level. I'm sure they called the 49ers to see if the 49ers were interested in doing something, and they might have included. Look, I know this for a fact. Guys that interviewed for the Raider job as general manager this year, they went in there suggesting they move Adams as an asset. Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have thrown that out there if he didn't know that there is something more to this than meets the eye. And I think it may be one of the reasons why the Hassan Riddick deal is being held up is because I think the Jets think they can get Davante Adams, but they don't know what it's going to cost. And they can't give money to Riddick until they know what that's going to cost.
Really? That's again, fascinating. Yeah.
It's a conspiracy theory. I'm all in on conspiracy theories, as you know, but I do know that the Raiders, if they want to really enhance their team, you know, the best thing might be, since they can't get the ball to Adams, he's going to be a problem during the season.
I'm a little surprised Aaron Rodgers hasn't invited you on an ayahuasca retreat yet, Michael. I'm saying that completely honestly. I think you'd be a great partner to hang out with, share some stories. I don't know.
Yeah, we'd love that. Yeah, awesome. I would love that. I just was hoping he'd read my book, Football Done Right. That was the only thing I was trying to get him to do.
I think you can send him a signed copy. I think it can make its way into camp. I think that's totally possible. You know enough people. Anyway, I would pay good money to hear what comes out of that meeting between
you
and
Aaron. It's a great idea. I think I'm going to do that.
I think you should.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, write it down right now. I think it's a smart choice. While we're talking Jets here, this is not the Jets specifically, but it's a team they are facing in the first preseason game this weekend. As we did get the confirmation that Jayden Daniels is going to suit up for the Commanders, QB1 on the depth chart. We don't know how long he'll play for Washington, but the Commanders have taken some money in the markets, Michael. That was about a pick 'em to a point favorite against the Jets. We're now seeing that out. I'm looking at 2.5 is pretty much painted across the board there with a 34.5 total this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Washington has got so many moving pieces with Dan Quinn. I don't know how it's all going to work out. It'll be interesting what the Jets do, too. Can they play Tyrod Taylor behind an offensive line that doesn't have all the starters in? I think that becomes a little problematic, right? I mean, how do you handle that situation? I think the Jets have to get that offensive line in order. Now, I know we talked about this when I was on Mitch and Pauly today. They said this is the offensive line is the top five in the league. You know, I think, look, they have certainly have a potential to be a better line than they were last year. But John Simpson, Tippmann, and Vera Tucker, they've got to play well inside. I think Tyron Smith's got to stay healthy. But Fasuna, the kid they drafted in the first round, we get a chance to see him and see how he plays along with Max Mitchell, who they drafted in the fourth round last year. Their backup offensive line looks like they'll be able to move the football. I just don't see how they're going to play Tyrod Taylor much in the preseason. I think you'll see a lot of Andrew Peasley and Adrian Martinez.
I just always get worried when you put the word veteran in front of offensive lineman, put him in New York, where we saw what happened last year when they rolled out there with Dwayne Brown, who's guy pushing 40. What happened? Missed time, and it ultimately cratered the rest of that offensive line. Not that, you know, Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, very, very solid, respectable careers, just like Dwayne Brown had, but that's the natural thing. Whenever you're talking O-line, that position in the league, Michael, I automatically just kind of go, whoa, all right, I'm not ready to buy in all the way from a team that was bottom five O-line last year to now all of a sudden top five.
Yeah, no quite. Me either. Look, but I think that's why the rookie, it's important to see what happens with the rookie. They got to see how he plays.
And how will Elijah Vera Tucker, coming back off a season that was pretty much wiped out in 2023, how will he look as well coming forward this year? We'll discuss one other quarterback news that dropped earlier today as far as preseason availability and how it has impacted a line in the Green Bay-Cleveland preseason matchup. Also, get into some quarterback head-to-head props for season-long betting when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Really fun hour number two for us on the Lombardi Line. Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, who is a great one of our college football betting experts. He joins us in 15 minutes to talk about some of his best bets from the College Football Betting Guide, which is out now, in case you were unaware of that, released on August the 1st. We'll also go into a win total I'm really liking as far as an under to back on the MAC. We'll also talk some red chip, blue chips for Michael's defensive lineman coming up toward the end of the show here. Some other news and notes around the NFL before we dive into some of these head-to-head quarterback props this year. We have an injury of the day, which is unfortunately not a new injury. It's Emmanuel Mosley, who's been banged up a bunch, can't stay on the field. Torn pec is the report from head coach Dan Campbell. It's expected to at least be, if healthy, a key piece for Detroit's secondary that has a lot of question marks, probably more so than any, wouldn't you say, Michael, of their position groups this year in 2024. And now Mosley out indefinitely, according to Adam Schefter, the report there of ESPN.
Yeah, the poor guy, he couldn't stay healthy to save it. You know, I mean, it's challenging for him. He came back from a knee injury after they signed him, couldn't stay healthy with that. And now he's got other issues with the pec. I mean, this is bad. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they've done enough with their depth chart of how they drafted, what they've signed, Carlton Davis, the two kids they drafted, Arnold. So I think there's enough there that they really probably weren't counting on Mosley. They lowered his cap number this year. They took a pay cut because he hasn't played. And so I think life moves on for the Lions, although – you know, watching practice on Twitter today against the Giants, a lot of fighting going on. Neighbors was getting into it with everybody. Remember, Brian Daboll said they need great character on their team. They had more fights there the last 2 days. It just seems like there's a lot of energy and hostility going into these two practices.
No doubt. Yeah, this was for the Mosley piece, if it was, say, maybe 2 years ago, you might slightly downgrade a team's power rating from a secondary perspective. But he only played one game last year. He's had back-to-back ACLs. Now you have the torn pec. So it's more just a tough break more than anything for a guy who was off to such a promising start in his career. We are, yes, getting into joint practice season. Other small news and notes from different NFL camps. No Bryce Young from head coach Dave Canales. He will not play in the preseason opener. That's a big reason why the Pats are out to 6.5-point favorites in that game. I'm sorry, Michael. You're not going to find me going anywhere near a line, even in the preseason, where the Pats are laying 6.5. With the kind of roster they have.
I mean, so if Bryce Young's not playing, does that mean Andy Dalton's not playing? I would think this line would have moved the other way if Andy Dalton plays, right? I mean, who's going to play if Andy Dalton doesn't play? And here's the other thing I don't understand what Dave Canales is saying is he's got to get his offensive line in shape. I mean, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, Taylor Moten's been hurt quite a bit. They got Robert Hunt's missed practices. Damian Lewis, they're two high-priced free agent guys. But they got to get this offensive line kind of get going a little bit here. And, you know, and if Andy Dalton doesn't play, does Jake Plummer play? I mean, I don't know. Jake Plummer's been hurt. So they have one quarterback on the roster, Jake Luton. That's all they have.
I mean, I'd love to see Jake the Snake, come back. The rookie Jack Plummer out of Louisville and then Jake Luton. Yeah, those would be the third and fourth on the depth chart right now for Carolina.
Well, Plummer's hurt, though. Plummer's hurt. He's out. I mean, he's not going to play. So, like, the Andy Dalton. So why do we think that, you know, and I think New England's going to play very vanilla based. They're not going to play their guys. They've got a bunch of injuries too. And look, New England's offensive line is a mess right now. They have no tackles.
That total's been crashing. It was set low to begin with, but we're down to 33.5. I see a couple offshores down to 33 now. Lowest total we have on the board there for week one. That's one of the two games as well coming up Thursday night, 7 Eastern there with Carolina going to New England. We also get the report that Jordan Love is going to play in the preseason opener against Cleveland. Not sure how long there. I watched a little bit of the family night scrimmage. Always a great tradition for Wisconsinites where you get to watch a bunch of guys really do nothing. But yeah, I thought it was at least interesting to see special teams. Rich Bisaccia, the special teams coordinator, they were trying some kind of exotic blocking schemes on the new kickoff just to try to create some separation. It was a lot of pinching in toward the middle of the field. I'm at least curious to see how that goes for more of the more inventive special teams coordinators, but that's really the only thing that I'll be interested to watch in because the backup quarterback situation not great right now for the Packers. And there's a growing belief here that Sean Clifford might not have a job. He might lose that number two quarterback job behind Love if the training camp continue, or I should say the preseason, if it goes as bad as training camp's been so far for him. Packers 3-point dogs on the road at Cleveland this weekend.
You know, I was shocked that he was drafted, and I wasn't sold on him coming out. And he had a good summer last summer. But like I wrote about in for Veasan Online today, you know, you can't go by what happens in the preseason for these quarterbacks. You can't. I think to me it's hard. Now, I think the reason Jordan Love, you're going to see him, is because it's either Jordan Love or Sean Clifford. Michael Pratt, the kid from Tulane, he's not going to play. He's hurt. How he got hurt, I don't know, but he's hurt. It doesn't sound like he's going to play. So if Love plays, then Clifford's going to play the whole game. You got to see if that offensive line can hold up.
Yep, and the Pratt, the seventh rounder out of Tulane, yeah, he was promising to start camp, and the early reports were that it wasn't that far of a gap. Clifford just been a turnover machine so far in camp. Not exactly what you want when you're a backup quarterback trying to make a name for yourself, but that's been the story there for Sean Clifford. Sean Clifford will not be among the topic of our season-long head-to-head props we talk about here, Michael, but there are a couple that stood out to me. We have a list of regular season pass yards head-to-head. You also can bet pass touchdowns head-to-head, as there are so many menus now, depending on where you are in the country, you can bet on these. One I wanted to get into, it is the one that stood out to me the most, Jared Goff versus Matthew Stafford, a couple of former Lion quarterbacks, the guys who were traded for each other there. Goff's minus 120, Stafford's minus 105. Is it me, Michael, or is nobody at all mentioning what was the key storyline for the Rams each of the last 2 years, which was durability for Matthew Stafford, who was dealing with elbow, with back injuries, behind an up-and-down offensive line? Well, three of his O-line starters are already banged up in camp. Nobody seems to be making any deal out of how Stafford's almost 40 now, and yet the odds would suggest that Goff, who plays a nearly entirely indoor schedule through the months of September, October, and November, is about a pick 'em in this market against Stafford. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. To me, Stafford, you know, is one good. I mean, look, let's be honest. The Rams tried to trade Stafford last year, and I think it was clear that nobody wanted to assume that huge contract with the guarantees, so they couldn't do it. They were worried about his elbow staying healthy. That's why they were trying to trade him. They weren't unhappy with him. They were worried about his injury and his durability. And now he comes back. They gave him just a little bit of money. I mean, they didn't do really much to get him satisfied, which tells you they're still worried about that. And I agree. Haverstein is still hurt. Jonah Jackson and Alec Jackson, the left tackle and left guard, they're both hurt. Now, I don't know how badly they are. The backups are hurt. They've got two backups that are out. The rookie's sixth-round pick, Limmer, he's hurt. Leverston's hurt, the seventh-round pick. So, you know, I mean, and then the college free agents are, they're really running on a lot less players than typically. Five of their offensive linemen are out, and that's the backups.
If you're handicapping durability, it's not just the longevity, you know, how much tread is on the tires of a Matthew Stafford, but It's the line in front of him. It's the fact that Jared Goff has arguably the best offensive line in the league and is the most likely to be staying upright, especially given the system, the way the ball comes out of his hand quickly. You know, Goff threw for almost 600 more yards than Stafford, and in only one more game. I feel pretty logical in sitting here and saying, Michael, he's probably set the over-under at games that Stafford misses at probably 1.5, if that's fair, at the very least one, maybe slight juice to the over on that, where you feel pretty comfortable about Goff unless the Lions have a division locked up or a one seed locked up and they rest him in week 18. Most likely, you feel pretty confident in saying you're at least going to get more games out of Goff than Stafford this year.
I think so, and I think one thing we know, Detroit's offensive line should be ready to go come the opening game. I think that's the thing that worries you most about the Rams is, can they offset these injuries? And, you know, when you have two young players competing in the back of the guard, seventh and sixth round pick, now they're not hurt. They're just competing. So I think that becomes a problem. There's so many young players. That's what I was trying to make the point, is five of these offensive linemen are late round picks or college free agents that are backups. That's hard to win with.
And yet, if you find markets, which there are many out there, especially in the East Coast jurisdictions, you can find regular season pass yards head-to-head, Goff -120, Stafford, I'm seeing -105. The only one that I kind of did a double take on the odds here with the regular season pass touchdowns head-to-head, Caleb Williams, -125 favorite over Jalen Hurts, who's even money. Granted, I get it. Hurts, great red zone running quarterback. Philadelphia might siphon some of those passing looks in the red zone away, but that's a lot of love and respect given to Caleb Williams, who's a rookie quarterback who's still yet to show us anything, especially once it gets into the red zone where we've seen rookie quarterbacks struggle so much early on in their careers.
You talk about an offensive line that we're worried about. I mean, seriously, are they going to be good enough? Are they going to be good enough that it's going to work? I don't know. I don't know. I think that's got to be something to think about, you know, because I think this bear line is the concern. And look, Caleb Williams is good, but I think Jalen Hurts, one thing we know with Kellen Moore, there is a lot of throws down there in that red zone, and it's play action throws, which really fits right into Jalen Hurts' offense. I'd have a hard time going against Hurt in this category.
Sure thing. 23 passing touchdowns last year for Hurts, even in a season where he threw 15 picks, struggles with inaccuracy at times, how the Eagles cratered in the second half of the year. Even if you're getting 23, which, again, that was not a good year the way it all ended for Philadelphia, getting blown out in the first round of the postseason, you really feel confident in Caleb Williams eclipsing that if we're setting 23 as a benchmark for Jalen Hurts? I know I certainly don't. And it's also a great example, Michael, of how there is still great value to be had. No matter where you search, there's a lot of different menus and options out there you can look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key, is to get the right number and then make sure that there is. You got to ask yourself in all these scenarios, what would have to be true for this to be correct?
100%.
And I think when you're looking at the Bears, Caleb's got to do something extraordinary as a rookie.
When we come back, Tim Murray from VSiN Primetime, great mind in college football. He has all sorts of bets to get into, and some Notre Dame injury news we'll break down with Tim on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Into our final half hour of the Lombardi Line. Pleased to talk some college football right now, Michael. Not only is it NFL training camp news and notes going on with injuries, but we've also had a bunch of those in college football as we are just a few weeks out from the start of week zero in the college football season. I'll go to some action win totals I have an under we'll talk about in our next segment to close out the show. But right now we go to our progressive guest line. This is a man you see on VSiN Primetime every single weeknight, 6 to 9 Eastern. Tim Murray, big contributor as well to our college football betting guide. Tim, I hope you're not too sullen, though, after Notre Dame gets a big loss injury-wise yesterday. Unfortunately, that season hasn't even started, and the Domers are always having bodies drop here. Charles Jagasaw tore his right pec there, the starting left tackle for Notre Dame. I'm seeing a win total at 10 now. Still -165 to make the playoff this year, Tim. I know it wasn't great news for you as a guy who's covered Notre Dame for quite some time, but how should this change bettors' outlook on the Fighting Irish heading into this year?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I literally just got off the horn with Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame with The Athletic, and that's going to be on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast coming out later today, guys. But yeah, this is a big loss. There's no way around it. We had professional college football handicapper Brad Powers on primetime last night, guys, and he said that, you know, this is the biggest loss so far in the preseason, you know, college football ranks. And Pete Sampson put it this way. He said of the top five most important players for Notre Dame to lose, Charles Jagasaw was in that top five. He's not Riley Leonard. He's not Benjamin Morrison. They're all American cornerback, but this was a big loss. And, you know, spin it to the NFL ranks. You know, Michael, you look at Joe Alt was their left tackle last year, right? He's the fifth overall pick by the Chargers. Blake Fisher was their right tackle last year. He was the 59th overall pick by the Houston Texans. So offensive line was already going to be a question. Charles Jagasaw started the Sun Bowl for Notre Dame, and they were really excited about what he could bring to the table. So it does look like for now they will be putting in Tosh Baker at left tackle and keeping Emil Wagner at right. But as for what it does from a betting standpoint, you look at the market for the Texas A&M game, guys. It moved from 49 to 47 from a total. I agree with that. I was able to fortunately grab some 49 to the under. I would still lean under. I think Notre Dame's going to have to be really cognizant of the edge rushers for Texas A&M, which will be their strength in Mike Elko's first year down there at Texas A&M. But I do think Notre Dame's defense, guys, is one of the top units in the entire country. So I think under in that game is still worth a look. And, you know, from a win total perspective, I don't know if there's a ton of value on an over or under, 10 wins. There are some shops out there that do have 10 and a half heavily juiced guys, but we have the schedule pulled up right there. Outside of Texas A&M, they're a favorite in every single game. The Florida State game comes off of a bye. Florida State, I believe, will be playing their fourth consecutive game. Weather could be a concern there. So from a schedule standpoint, Notre Dame, if they win 9 games, it's going to be deemed, in my opinion, an absolute disaster for the Irish this year.
Well, let's shift to another potential disaster. Let's go to the West Coast, UCLA. You know, we saw Deshaun Foster not get off to a great start, and everybody deserves some kind of blame for that. You know, he goes up there without his cards. They knew that he always was worried about speaking in front of people, and it really did not get the program off on a good start. They go to Hawaii. They're only a 12.5-point favorite in Hawaii. But then after Hawaii, I have a hard time finding where they're going to get another win on the schedule. I think you agree with me playing the under.
Yeah, Michael, I totally agree. And there were some really juicy numbers. I wasn't able to get 6.5, which some people were. That was a mistake. You know, 5.5 was what I grabbed, and I still would look under 5 here. You know, the Hawaii game, I'm a big proponent of Timmy Chang. They lost their leading wide receiver, Stephen McBride, indefinitely with a suspension due to an off-field arrest. So we'll keep an eye on that. But the market has loved Hawaii so far. That game moved from 18.5 down to, as you pointed out, Michael, under 2 touchdowns, which is pretty wild. But let's just look at the schedule, man. You got to go on the road to LSU in the non-con, Oregon, Penn State. That's probably one of the toughest 3-game stretches any team will face this entire year. I think Rutgers will be better this year. I like the fact that they get UCLA at home. Nebraska on the road, we know that'll be a challenge. Matt Rhule, I think, will have things turned around in year 2. If he can get any semblance of quarterback play with Dylan Raiola, I think Nebraska's a team that we're going to look over their win total. Iowa's a team that I personally played over their win total. I do think Washington, you have some question marks in year 1 of Jed Fish there and the turnover that they've had with that roster. And then USC in a rivalry game to close out the year. So, look, I think Deshaun Foster was an interesting hire. I think UCLA was dealt a pretty tough hand with Chip Kelly leaving in February to take the offensive coordinator position at Ohio State. But I think one thing to note here, which is a really massive issue, is that D'Anton Lynn left to go to USC. He is a rising star as a defensive coordinator, and that was a huge coup for USC and Lincoln Riley to grab them from their crosstown rival. So we'll see how Eric Bieniemy does as an offensive coordinator in the college ranks, guys. But lastly, I'll point this out. Phil Steele always points this out in his preview magazine. UCLA has the number one difference in strength of schedule from last year to this year. That schedule that we just showed everybody, that is a top 5, if not top 2, most difficult schedule in the country this year. And it would be an absolute victory, and they should be doing a parade in LA if they make a bowl game.
He's Tim Murray with us at One Tim Murray, where you follow Tim, and also check out the College Football Betting Podcast. I've really been enjoying the conference by conference previews. Tim's been doing a lot of great guests, including Phil Steele, new pod about to drop a little bit later today. Been a great way to get your prep going for the college football perspective. As we stay in the Big Ten here, Tim, let's go to a team that does not have nearly as much transition as UCLA. The biggest transition for Iowa, though, is they have a new OC, and Tim Lester comes in, replaces the Brian behind Ferentz experiment, which is finally over there for the Hawkeyes. Our Matt Eumanns, Iowa cracked his top 25 preseason rankings at 22 here. And with a win total at 8, it's a very interesting setup this season for a team with a lot of guys back. But we're not really sure how this new look offense will actually go here for Cade McNamara at QB.
I mean, the question is, can it get any worse, right? I mean, that I think that's ultimately the question. This was a bottom 10 offense a year ago, and they still found a way to win double-digit games. You look at the schedule, there's a lot of toss-up games on this schedule. They're only going to be a clear underdog, guys, in one game, and that's the road trip to Ohio State. The one thing I'll note about that, I'm not calling for an Iowa outright upset, but let's talk about the scheduling situation for that particular game. They're going on the road, Iowa is to Ohio State, but it's the week before arguably the biggest college football game of the year when Ohio State goes out to Oregon and Iowa's coming off a bye week. So, look, I don't know if Iowa has the horses to go into the horseshoe and pull off the upset, but I think that's going to be an interesting situational angle in that October 5th showdown. But outside of that, guys, look at this schedule. Where's Oregon? Not on it. Where's Penn State? Not on it. Where's Michigan? Not on it. Where's USC? This is a very manageable conference schedule where Iowa is going to be a favorite in 11 of their 12 games. Look, Iowa State, that's always a tricky game, the Cy-Hawk Trophy. They get that game at Kinnick Stadium. I do think Iowa State's going to be much improved this year, but I look at the schedule for Iowa and Tim Lester coming in, the former Western Michigan coach. He was last year as an analyst with the Green Bay Packers, so maybe picked up some things from Matt LaFleur. They've talked about, hey, get this, doing pre-snap motion, which is a wild concept to think about, but that's what they're going to bring to the table this year at Iowa. And then we know the defense is going to be absolutely loaded. I believe they bring back 10 starters. The defensive coordinator is back. Yeah, the win total we've seen tick up in the market. 7.5 was something I was able to grab, you know, a couple weeks ago on the podcast, but still 8, I think, is worth a look because this is a team that I do think has a very good chance to win 9, maybe even 10 games this year.
And your Heisman, I like your long shot Heisman play, KJ Jefferson at Central Florida. I think Central Florida, this is the perfect quarterback for Gus Malzahn. You know, he can do a little bit of everything, not a great thrower. Gussie's offense is horrendous in the passing game, but what he needs, it's a six-back attack, and I think Jefferson will shine here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Michael, from this, I threw it out as a long shot, right? And that's where you have a little fun with these Heisman Trophy odds because a lot of the value has been sucked out. It's a quarterback-driven award. I know Devontae Smith won it in 2020, but guys, since 2000, we've seen 4 non-quarterbacks win this award, and they were all in the top 2 teams in the country. So I was looking for quarterbacks, maybe a dual-threat quarterback, and UCF is one of those high-variance team guys. I think the ceiling is incredibly high for the folks down there in Orlando with Gus Malzahn. They went out and grabbed Penny Boone from Toledo, who is a highly, highly regarded transfer. They patch him up with RJ Harvey in that backfield, two guys who rushed for over 1,400 yards. And, you know, Gus Malzahn said it. He hasn't had a quarterback like this since Cam Newton in 2010 when he was his offensive coordinator at Auburn. And I'm not saying he's going to be Cam Newton, but I just think when you've got a 6-year senior like KJ Jefferson, you're looking at that 100-to-1 range, which is out there at a number of shops. I think this is where you could get a little fun, where you could look at someone like a KJ Jefferson, like a Kyren Drones was another long shot, the quarterback of Virginia Tech, where you could get a little creative. You know, look, there's a reason Dylan Gabriel is the favorite to win this award, and I agree with the movement to make him the favorite. I'm a big believer in Oregon this year, but I think at this time of the year, guys, is where you get a little creative, maybe look at a quarterback who could lead a team to a conference championship, and guess what? If UCF wins the Big 12, they've got the auto bid. They're a top 4 team based off of the committee's eyes. And maybe we're talking about him in New York City.
It's a great breakdown from Tim Murray. You can see on VEASAN Primetime weeknights, 6 to 9 Eastern. Always good to catch up, Tim. Be well.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
For all those best bets and also Tim's contributions to the betting guide, you can become a VEASAN Pro subscriber. We're offering 3 years of VEASAN Pro access for just $350 this week only. Check that out right now. We'll wrap up the show next. I've got a college football bet of the day and some red chip, blue chip defensive tackles. We'll discuss it on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back for the final time on the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy today and tomorrow. Great to have Elliot Bowman as well, our producer, Jeremy Wegnall, our technical director, everybody else helping out at our Circus Sportsbook studio. Always a lot happening here, Michael, because it's Olympic time. I was just watching a shout-out U.S. Women's National Team, able to gut out another extra time win. They knock off Germany in the semifinals. It's a pretty big favorite. So the U.S. to go to the gold medal match now, coming up in a few days there for the U.S. Women's National Team. And we're, once again, Michael, seeing some betting movement against the U.S. men's basketball team here, laying some big spreads. I mean, they haven't come close to covering their last two games, and they are laying 27 right now against Brazil in a game that gets underway here in about 45 minutes. I know you can't wait to watch how Joel Embiid's going to look.
I love today my man Charles Barkley. I love what he said. You know, he just said basically he was on WIP, the local radio station here in the Philadelphia area, and he basically called out Embiid's conditioning. He said, I hope, and underscored hope, that, you know, this will humble him in terms of get him in shape for the season. Paul George was on Barkley's podcast, and I think WIP ran the clip. So that's what he said. I've been saying it for 7 years. I mean, you look at Embiid's conditioning at Kansas compared to when he came in the league, and they've nurtured him and babied him. I went to practice. Barkley was at the practice I went to at the 76ers, and Embiid spent most of his day sitting on a folding chair.
And Charles, we know, says like how it is.
Yeah. Like, Barkley and I looked at each other like, he don't get it. But, you know, look, he's got the media behind him. He's got 1,000 excuses, so life goes on. But he's gotten humbled. I think America has seen what I know. I really do. I think America has seen what I know about Embiid the bat. He's very talented. But it's hard to put a team around him because of the way he plays, the way he doesn't run the floor, the way he wants to shoot three-pointers, the way he doesn't low post anybody, the way he doesn't use his size. I think America's seeing it for the first time.
With finally a coach that will hold him accountable for stuff. I mean, Steve Kerr made it very clear early in the process he was not taking any of the BS. He was taking, let's take the egos out of it. And we have seen games where it's meant Embiid has been exposed and has not played as a result. It's funny how we're down to at least this more respected shops here. USA only laying 26 at Circa behind me. Some books on the East Coast have this 27.5. So there's some differentiation in the market. I'm with you. I would. I mean, at least like first half, you can get Brazil plus 16. USA has come out to very slow starts. There's also not much incentive for them to really run up score lines at any point now as they just try to keep their guys healthy here into the knockout rounds. Quarterfinals there today coming up in about 40 minutes. Brazil and the U.S. Huge upset. I don't know if you watched any of the France game against Canada earlier today, but the defense, they just put Jamal Murray and Co. in an absolute grinder today with Wembanyama, Gobert, French were just flying around. They win outright by 9 as 8-point dogs. That was impressive. France now will go on to the semifinals there with the upset over the second favorite Canada in that competition.
Wow, there we go, you know. And Wemby, you know, Wemby's taking his team. Once Wemby gets a little stronger and bigger, I mean, I think that Spur team is coming, don't you, Ben?
No doubt. It will be, yes. And the way they made, they took Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Murray out of the game for Canada. Like, they had nowhere to go. That was super impressive for the French who got the upset today. Also, today we've been continuing our series of daily college football win totals I've been giving out here. We stay in the MAC. If you missed it over the weekend, I'm really high on Bowling Green. I like them over 6.5 wins. You can get that plus 118. FanDuel, Boyd in Nevada, same numbers as FanDuel rest of the country, where you can find that. Unfortunately, Bowling Green's about the only team I really like here, Michael, in this conference, because nobody was picked apart more than the MAC in the transfer portal this year. Unfortunately, the team that was losers of the most this year. I mean, a team that got absolutely throttled by the transfer portal. It's unfortunate, yet I'm surprised that Ohio is still a 6.5 win total team, in large part because of what Tim Albin's been able to do as a head coach. 10 wins each of the last 2 years. But there's a new OC in Brian Smith, a new DC in John Hauser. There were 7 top receivers, the 7 leading pass catchers. They're all gone now for Ohio. The leading receiver from last year, just updating the numbers here, Chase Hendricks caught 11 passes last year. He's your leading receiver back. The outstanding running back in Sia Bangura goes to Minnesota in the transfer portal. Curtis Rourke, the quarterback, the former MAC Offensive Player of the Year, he gone. He's now starting as quarterback at Indiana. Huge losses, especially on the offensive side of the ball for an Ohio team that just will not have the horses to move the football consistently. and the top three teams in the MAC. They have to go on the road to face this year, including the top two, Toledo and Miami, Ohio, both on the road. That's why I was comfortable laying a big amount of juice. I usually don't lay more than about minus 150 juice on a win total, but at minus 144, that was the best mark I found at, again, FanDuel and then Boyd in Nevada with the same FanDuel lines. Ohio's ceiling is six. I mean, they're not getting seven. And I'm comfortable laying a $1.44 price there to go under 6.5 on a team that just got decimated there, the Ohio Bobcats, this year.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, they've gone to five consecutive bowl games, but they are kind of like, I would say they're the Washington of the MAC. You know, Washington lost all those starters to Alabama because they had a good team. And Jed Fish walks into Washington with really kind of putting together a team, and it's going to be a challenge. And I think Ohio's the same way. I think Tim Albin's got a hard task in front of him with six returning starters, two on offense, four on defense, you know, and then they open up against Syracuse, which will be tough, South Alabama. They play Morgan State, which they're a 26-point favorite, but then they've got to go to Kentucky. And once you play a big team like Kentucky, then all of a sudden, then you go into the MAC and you're really not healthy. You're kind of beat up. They've kind of taken a lot of toll out of you. And I have a hard time finding five wins on their schedule when you look at them based on who they have coming back and based on what happened last year. I think it's going to be really challenging, Ben.
Especially, too, with the line move we're already seeing week one at Syracuse, where that's been steamed by a lot of really respected money. That's out to 17. Syracuse is favored in that game. You combine that with Kentucky, like you mentioned, Michael. Those could be two games where you are super beat up right off the bat. Sounds like Park Cannavaro, who did start in the bowl game last year for Ohio, but who has been a second or third string guy the last couple of years, he will be the new starting quarterback. But, 16 starters of the 22 from last year, either graduating or in the transfer portal. Not great for Ohio. We'll have another one tomorrow. We'll go to the
I think Western Michigan and Bowling Green are the two teams in the conference that return the most starters. Now, Western Michigan was 4-8 last year with Lance Taylor's third season. He'll enter his third year. So, to me, they've got to prove that they can come back. The reason they didn't lose a lot of players, Western Michigan, is because they were 4-8.
Sure.
So, when you win in the MAC, you're going to lose your players.
Not all returning production is created equal. That is a great lesson to learn from that. Whereas Ohio had the sixth worst returning production of anybody there in FBS for 2024. All right, as we wrap up the show, and yes, Sun Belt coming tomorrow, so get ready for that, Michael. Hold your horses. Got a Sun Belt under we're looking at in what is a very deep league, actually. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Red Chip, Blue Chip, they're out right now. One of my favorite parts of listening to the GM Shuffle, breaking down the best players in the league by position group. And you guys were recently discussing defensive tackles here, Michael. So for those who missed it, first off, a couple guys who just missed the cut for you, your honorable mentions were a couple of big names here that a lot of people will recognize, especially for their, at least in Jalen Carter's instance, for early career contributions.
Yeah, Carter got two sacks at the end of the year. He got out of shape. I wrote about him today in the column. He was going to win Rookie of the Year easily. Defensive Rookie of the Year was having a good first half of the season, and then everything fell apart. Zach Zeiler, I mean, the guy pressures inside. He gets quarterback hits. He's one of the – he and Christian Wilkins were a great combination inside for the Miami Dolphins. I think, to me, one of the things which is really important, we all focus on sacks, which are important, but – when you can get into the paint like Wilkins can do, Matabuke can do, that Quinton Williams can do, these guys, the blue chip defensive tackles that create problems when they get in front of the quarterback. What's the hardest thing for a quarterback is to throw or step up in the pocket when somebody's in what I call the paint area. And these guys do a tremendous job. And, I didn't put Jeffrey Simmons in the blue chip. He's a red because he was hurt last year. I thought Kobe Turner from the Rams was really good. Buckner's been consistent. And I think McNeil from the Lions is really a good player. He's coming on. And I think ultimately, as they keep going, the Lions, and playing from in front, he can be a disruptive force. So to me, this is the most important position. If you're building a defense today in the National Football League, the way the game is set up, the way you have to control the middle of the field. The edge rushers don't bother Tua. What bothers Tua is inside pressure. The edge rushers don't bother Tom Brady when he played. What the inside rushers do. It's the same thing with Mahomes. And so, to me, you build your team inside out now. You need great players on the edges, but you can find some edges. What you can't find is guys that push the pocket back. And then when you have a blue chip player like this, like Dexter Lawrence, and you put another player next to him where they can't double him, like Wilkins is going to be inside. Who's going to get the double team, Wilkins or Max Crosby?
Sure thing.
Pretty tough.
Dexter Lawrence of the Giants, Christian Wilkins for the Raiders. Those are two of the blue chips. The rest of the list, Chris Jones of the Chiefs with Quinnen Williams of the Jets and Justin Madubuike of the Ravens. We have a lot more red chip, blue chips coming. It's that time of year, Michael. All things GM shuffle, breaking down positional groups. I can't wait, man, for preseason football to get here. A couple days away. We'll talk with Matt Maiocco tomorrow of NBC Sports Bay Area on what his thoughts were on the Brandon Ayuk deal. So I'm really looking forward to that, Michael. Always a pleasure being with you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Sharp Money. Up next, Patrick Maher, Dustin Sweetelson. They take it away right after this.